Welcome to WebEx, practical web accessibility tips.
Welcome to WebEx, podcast number 64, language abbreviations and quotes. This is your host, Dennis.
And I'm Ross, the co-host.
Hello, Ross.
Hello, Dennis. How's the weather been out in your neck of the woods?
Let's see. Pretty nice in the Bay Area here. Well, actually, it's been, last week it was like in the low 80s and nice, and then a few days this week it was in like the 90s. It was pretty hot, but not too bad, you know, not humid or anything, so I've been enjoying it. It's been pretty smoky and hazy, though, from all the fires in California. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Yeah. So,
what about... Do you see it on the horizon, or...?
It just kind of, like, fills the air, like you can't look, like, across the bay. Normally, you could just, like, see pretty clearly across the bay and everything, and some days you can't see at all, like, zero across the bay. It's pretty weird. My friend lives in Sacramento. I guess it's really bad there, too.
Yikes.
So, anyways, what about Michigan? How's the summer there?
It's nothing bad, you know. It's humid like always. Today it was raining this morning. I'm hoping it's going to clear up because I've got Tigers tickets.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
I went to a Giants game, but San Francisco Giants game for the first time. That was cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, inside the stadium there's like... the advertising, there's like Yahoo and like, you know, all these like tech companies. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, you know you're in San Francisco.
But speaking of Michigan and Detroit, the a quick announcement. The next Refresh Detroit meetup is scheduled for July 30th. What's it? That's Wednesday, right?
Yeah, it's Wednesday.
July 30th, and back at... some old stomping grounds in Brighton, Stout Pub, I believe it's called.
Yep. We've been there a few times before. And we're going to be having a very special guest, who that might be.
Me?
Yeah.
So I'll be returning home for 8 days to visit, and yeah, it's going to be cool to return to another Refresh Detroit meetup. So if you're in the area and you're interested in web accessibility and web standards and... web design, then come to the meetup. It's usually a fun time.
Yeah.
Well, it's always a fun time, right?
Oh, yeah, it's always a fun time. Without a doubt. And Dennis will be giving a presentation on personal financial planning, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll have to give a presentation on something, huh?
Oh, no, I was just kidding. But...
You're talking about Yodlee's Money Center?
Yeah.
We won't get into detail with that, but web accessibility is slowly coming along for that Java web application.
Good, making a difference.
Yeah, well, I made a lot more progress the first 6 months, you know. The last 6 or 8 months has been tougher, but... next announcement, Ross and I are offering web accessibility consulting.
Yes. So, if you are working on a site that you know has to be accessible, whether it's a government site or, well, really all sites should be accessible, we will give you kind of a site audit where we'll go through the site and take a look at any accessibility issues and report on our findings.
Findings, we'll report on the good things, the bad things, and suggestions.
Yep.
So, contact us either through our personal websites or through the WebEx, you know, comments or email, webex@gmail.com.
WebEx.
Okay, now we have some several news bits to cover. First is an update on the ADA, and that's an article from Cindy Rowland at WebAIM, and basically just covers just some issues on updating the outdated Americans with Disabilities Act, usually referred to as the ADA. And I mean, most people are aware that there's nothing specifically in there that covers, you know, web accessibility. So there's just some different talk and ideas going on and how to update that. So check out the article. WebAIM always has good stuff. So
yeah.
It's highly recommended.
Yep. It's always good to see progress on any of these accessibility guidelines.
Yeah. Especially in the United States where they need it the most. So
yeah.
All right, next item, an opinion post from eAccess blog, Web Accessibility, Life in the Post-Guideline Age. So this is pretty interesting. It's definitely a good, interesting argument or point that that maybe we're getting to a point where guidelines aren't, well, maybe not necessarily needed, but just... it's just not feasible to implement accessibility guidelines any longer.
Yeah, which makes sense because there's so many accessibility concerns that you can't really turn into like a checkbox.
Yeah.
Like good alt text. I mean, you can have alt text, but if it's like the right or not, you can't just, I mean, how do you check that off? So
yeah, I mean... I think WCAG 2.0 is moving in the right direction. You know, I mean, it's they're laying out more, you know, the basic ideas and mindset. You know,
yeah.
And then you could drill down a little further and further to get to more details. But I mean, there's another point that they make about accessibility and usability, you know, like if a site like passes everything for accessibility, it doesn't necessarily mean it's usable.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so read the article. It's pretty cool. I put a comment in there too. Oh, it looks like Joe Clark has just commented yesterday. I believe what I meant and explicitly said was that standardistas already know by heart what they have to do to create an accessible site. Nobody pulls out a checklist and ticks one box after another anymore. Beginners, yes. Tables and font tags, losers. No, they don't know this whole thing exists, but real developers do, and they don't need guidelines.
I don't know if I completely agree that, I guess... Maybe it depends on the word guidelines, but I think something out there that kind of helps people at least remember. Because there's a lot of things to consider.
Yeah,
I mean... guidelines or...
I mean, if you take, you know... I mean, most developers out there hardly know anything about web accessibility,
yeah.
So...
And people need some way to learn. So to just say, well, make sites accessible is kind of hard. But I do see the point, too.
Okay, well, we better move on. We have a lot of topics to cover. Let's see. Just a blurb about Andrew Kirkpatrick from Adobe. He has posted some slides for his presentation, Web Maniacs Talk on Flex Accessibility. So I know Flex is getting a little more, well, it's getting a lot more popular lately. So, if you want to check out his slideshow about his speech in Washington, D.C. a short while back, then check out the Adobe Accessibility blog. And we'll post links to all these news issues on the WebAx site.
Very cool.
Another quick blurb about Easier YouTube, our JavaScript guru, Christian Heilman, or Chris Heilman, has recreated a YouTube interface that's just simpler, bigger, and way easier to use. You know, so it's tackling some web accessibility issues. Have you seen that, Ross?
I took a glance at it.
Yeah, cool. It's pretty neat, you know. It's just... it's visually, you know, it's much more simple, and it's visually, you know, just more straightforward. And there's buttons that are, you know, have color codes and, you know, the shapes of the buttons.
Yeah. Everything's much bigger. I think the icons themselves make a little more sense visually.
Yeah, they do. So, you know, obviously it's, well, from a glance you could tell it's taking care of, you know, cognitive and visual impairments with users. So, but I'm sure it still uses JavaScript, but that's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
So, more trickery from our friend Chris Heilman. Flash can now be indexed on Google.
Yeah.
It's an announcement that was going around like a short while ago.
So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. What does that mean as far as the future use of Flash? Because that was one of the other main arguments is that, well, Google can't read Flash, so you shouldn't make all Flash sites.
Right. Yeah. I haven't really looked into that myself. But, I mean, I know currently or previously, you know, you could always use progressive enhancement techniques, you know, and have your content on the page and just replace it with Flash.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, from everything I can tell, because I'm not a huge Flash developer, but the people I talk to, it's like Flash, you can build it to be pretty accessible, and now it can be pretty indexable if you build it right, where you can actually build URL structures within Flash, and so the back button doesn't break anything, that sort of thing. But the percentage of people who actually know how and can do that and do it is like
1%, so. That's a very good point. Yeah, I mean, that's great that you can do it, but we'll see how many people learn how to do it and actually do
yeah.
it. So, but cheers to Adobe for, you know,
yeah.
for, you know, continuing their big efforts in web accessibility. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually we had a person from Adobe present at Refresh Detroit last month, showed us a bunch of great things about Acrobat 9, so I'm really liking what Adobe's been doing lately.
Cool.
Yes.
Web ad.
All right, so on to our main segment.
Yeah, under the main segment.
We are talking about
language. Abbreviations and quotes and all that good stuff.
Lots of fun.
So we're going to cover mostly about the markup. You know, using CSS to do all kinds of stuff is like a whole other story. It's a whole other issue. So, yeah, and the basic idea is like, you know, you should define the language of the document and, you know, obviously semantically, you know, mark up quotes and your citations on the page. And to use them correctly and appropriately. So basically, technically we're talking about WCAG. In 1.0, it's guideline for clarified natural language usage. And I was checking out WCAG 2.0 on this matter, and they've got it organized pretty well. It's under guideline 3.1, readable. Make text content readable and understandable. So basically, that's a lot of the. There's other points under there, but that's where they're encapsulating this is, you know, using, you know, denoting the language and using abbreviations, quotes, and everything to make the content more understandable and readable.
Interesting.
Indeed. So I guess the first item we'll talk about is the language. So, basically, in the head of the HTML document, in the HTML tag, you could denote the language being used. So, for HTML, it's just the lang attribute. L-A-N-G equals, and then in quotes, you know, whatever the language is. E-N for English, or E-N hyphen U-S for United States English.
Yeah.
And then if you're doing like some strict XHTML, then the attribute is XML colon lang equals quote US or whatever.
Yeah. And then they say that it's not only important to specify what language you're using, but also when the language changes.
Correct.
So if you have a site that for whatever reason goes from one to another, it's important to make sure that you do know that it's changed.
You mean if the whole page has changed? Or just sections of the page?
My understanding is the whole page, just because I don't know of any tag that you can... I mean, I guess you could add that the lang attribute to something else, but I've only seen it used in the HTML head. But the WCAG does say, seems to mention it twice, one about language changing and then one about specifying the language. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, if you, like, in the Money Center web application, you know, you could select, you know, like four different languages. So that was one of the things that I... in the beginning, what I did was, you know, ensure the language attribute was there, and then when the user changed the language selection, you know, make sure the language attribute got updated appropriately.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about it next, but you could also use the lang attribute when you're doing inline quotes and stuff. If you're quoting somebody or like a phrase or something in a different language.
Oh, okay, so you can actually use that attribute on other HTML elements.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I've only seen it for the queue, the inline quote one, but I suppose you could use it for block quotes and stuff.
Well, I mean, you could potentially probably use it for anything then. You know, if you have one paragraph that's in Spanish, you could probably specify.
Yeah, I don't see why not. But, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, basically you want to do that if your main document is in one language and then a piece of text in the document is another language. But speaking of block quotes, that is our next item, is block quotes. Use them for block quotes.
Yeah, which is important to specify because there was a long time where... WYSIWYG editors would use them to create indents. No.
I know. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, why would you do that?
Yeah. I mean, I still see that now, you know?
Yeah.
And that little arrow with, like, the indent thing, and people don't realize that what that actually is. So, yeah, don't use block quotes for formatting. You want to obviously use your tags for semantic markup only and CSS for formatting only. Yeah, so use block quotes for a chunk of, you know, more than like a snippet or more than a phrase, you know, that somebody... where somebody is speaking.
Yep, so block quotes are actually block-level elements, meaning they don't... go inside of a paragraph.
Right. They create their own breaks.
Yep.
Let's see. Well, I guess... Yeah, and the other point is... so you could use a block quote with a site tag or a site attribute. So you could denote, like, who is saying it.
Which is what site means. So you're kind of, like, citing this quote was by whoever.
Yes, site, C-I-T-E.
Yeah, not S-I-T-E.
yeah, so you could say inside your block quote, you could have a couple paragraphs or whatever and then have a site tag, you know, with the person's name inside of it. Or you could do a block quote tag with the site attribute. Or you could do, like, a block quote tag with the site equals and then a URL if you're referring to actual, like, a phrase on another web page.
Yeah, I think it's important to mention also that if you do have a block quote, it's not valid or semantically correct just to add text inside of it. You should have like a paragraph, tags, or potentially a heading, that sort of thing. Because the block quote itself doesn't have all the semantic meaning that you would need which is why you have paragraphs and then the site.
Good point. Okay, let's move to inline quotes. We mentioned them before. So an inline quote basically is when you're within a paragraph and you're using and you're quoting somebody.
Yep.
So like a phrase or whatever that somebody is saying, like inside paragraph.
Yep. We've probably all done reports before where you've got, you know, your big quote that's kind of without of the paragraph, and then there's the other one where maybe you have a smaller quote within a paragraph, and that's what we're talking about here. It's just the Q tag.
Right. So using just the Q tag, and then as we mentioned before, you know, you can, if it's the quote is in a different language, and you should definitely add the lang attribute to that. Let's see.
And so the Q automatically adds quotation marks, except for Internet Explorer, correct? Or is it there's one that doesn't?
You know, I can't say for certain right now. But yeah, that's one of the CSS issues that can definitely be covered separately is, adding the quotation. I mean, a smart browser will add quotes when it sees, like, the block quote or the Q tags. You know, some browsers do, some browsers don't. So it's pretty much in the CSS. I think it's a matter of, see, how does that work? Something like you turn them all. I forget. You turn them all off and then you add them in or something.
Yeah,
like that.
And you can use kind of pseudo CSS selectors to do like a before and after. But it is IE6 that doesn't render them. But Firefox and Safari and Opera do. So, one thing to consider, but we'll address how to fix it.
Yeah, we could do a follow-up podcast sometime and talk about all the CSS for this.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. All right, let's move on to abbreviations.
The two tags we talk about here are abbreviation or acronym. So there's the ABBR tag and then the acronym tag. And it seems like those get kind of mixed up.
Yeah, and I know, one of them was being phased out in, like, the XHTML spec or something.
Yeah.
I forget which one it was.
I
want
to say it was the acronym.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Acronyms should be used for acronyms, so like UK or UK for United Kingdom and CA for California. And then abbreviations should be used for where like a longer word or phrase is just shortened.
Yep.
So let's see, what's a good example of that?
Your example of California could be shortened to Cali, or...
Oh, yeah, if you're saying Cali or Calif.
Yeah.
That's a good one. And then you could always, you could use the lang attribute here, too, if you wanted to. So, you would have the opening acronym tag title equals California, lang equals EN, and then your CA content, and then your closing acronym tag. And on the blog post for this podcast, you know, we'll put some examples of this stuff like up there and some links and everything. So,
yep. And with an acronym tag or an abbreviation tag, it's always good to have the title attribute, and then within the title attribute, the full word, whether it's an acronym or abbreviation. Well, that'll
right. Yeah, that's kind of a basic point we skipped there.
And then that way, if a user hovers over that abbreviation or acronym, it'll do a tooltip of what the actual word is. So that, I mean, that's great for accessibility. If you have some cognitive issue or you don't know the content otherwise, you can quickly see what it is.
That's right.
With CMSs nowadays, it should be pretty easy to build in something that kind of generates the common markup for those automatically.
Right. And, I mean, if you have, I don't know, it's arguable if you have a really popular acronym and I mean, maybe you don't have to use it every single time. I don't know. Maybe like USA. I think most people know what USA stands for, but it's generally a good idea to, you know, to put it in anyway. My freelance company is called Check Engine USA, and the USA stands for Usability Standards and Accessibility. So I always make sure. So I always make sure that I put in that acronym tag in there and put that in there so that people know what it really stands for, and it might be good for SEO too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting more content in there. I don't know if that the search engines actually index it, but it certainly can't hurt.
Right. And then a last note about the abbreviation tag or attribute. It can be used. The ABBR is an attribute that you could use for table headings or headers. So if you're using a data table, you got your table headers in there, and you have like, say a fairly long, you know, more than two or three words, you know, in the table header, you can abbreviate that or shorten that header for screen readers, so that every time a screen reader reads that header, you know, which may be for every, you know, for most cells in that row or column of the table. It doesn't have to read out like all the 5 or 10 words that you have. I mean, you could put an abbreviation in there for that header.
Very nice.
So instead of saying like colors, you know, let's see. Well, that's not really a good example. The name of the name of country in Africa or something. You could just have country. Or like color selected for this record. You could just have in the abbreviation attribute in the TH, you could just put color. And that's about it for abbreviations and acronyms. If you want to learn any more, I think we did, or I might have done a podcast actually on this subject like 2 years ago, so it'd be interesting to go back and check
that one
out.
Dig into the archives. It's a classic.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a shorter podcast and more basic, but I think it was specifically on abbreviations. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. Anywho, skis, so you wanted to talk a minute about CSS and the oral style.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of said we'd only talk about markup, but just to know that it's possible to alter how acronyms or abbreviations are spelled out in a screen reader, whether you want it to be normal, meaning that USA be spelled out as USA, or should it try and combine them all together? For example, like the Cali, you wouldn't want to spell out C-A-L-I. You want to say Cali. So you could choose.
Right. You don't want it to say Uzi. Yeah. You want USA. You want it to say USA.
Well,
no, that's definitely a good point and a good valid point for what we're talking about. So, so you could, there's a CSS, you could use the speak. Spell out or normal to change the way it is going to be pronounced. And just a last note, we'll put a link in the blog entry for this podcast about the codes for languages. I mentioned like EN for English or ENUS. You know, there's obviously a ton of other ones for all the languages. And so I'll have a link to where you could get a list of those.
Important to know?
It's an ISO representation of the names and languages from ISO 639, blah, 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 blah. So I think that pretty much wraps it up, Ross.
Expect to see all sorts of great block quotes and acronyms, abbreviations, and language tags on all websites now. And I'm holding you all
That's
to
right.
It.
And I want to see some inline quotes, too. Great. Well, that's it for podcast number 64, Language Abbreviations and Quotes. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you
later,
next time.
The WebAxe blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com, webaxe.blogspot.com. Email webaxe@gmail.com, webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAxe is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. www.checkengineusa.com.